Deutsche Welle. Africa Link.
Hello and a warm welcome to the show with me, Assumpta Latos. Coming up, stranded at the border between Nigeria and Cameroon.
I buy Aero in Cameroon and take to Port Harcourt, that's in Nigeria, to sell. That is how I earn my living. I've been at the borders now for 4 days. I have been blocked.
Also on the program, what was behind the fracas in the South African Parliament?
Honourable members, what the leave the house.
At the heart of all of this, of course, is that there is a gap in accountability, that the president does believe that he doesn't owe South Africa answers on Nkandla.
Stay with us for those stories and more coming up in the next 25 minutes.
Top story.
The end of the Ebola outbreak is not in sight. While countries affected by the epidemic are still trying hard to control it, other African states are sealing their borders and limiting people's movements. The news of patients recovering from Ebola after using the untested drug ZMapp has raised some hopes, but the World Health Organization says Ebola outbreak in West Africa will not be easy to contain. Here is Virush Yansari and Mark Caldwell with a fact box.
The World Health Organization said on Friday that it has drawn up a draft strategy plan to combat Ebola in West Africa over the next 6 to 9 months, suggesting that the epidemic will not be contained this year. The WHO will host an international consultation meeting on potential Ebola therapies and vaccines at its headquarters in Geneva in early September.
This follows a statement from South Africa on Thursday that all non-citizens travelling there from three of the virus-stricken countries, Guinea, Liberia and Sierra Leone, will be barred from entering. South African citizens arriving from those countries will be subject to strict medical screening. South Africa joins a growing list of African countries that have announced travel restrictions because of fears over Ebola spread. They include Kenya, Senegal, Cameroon, and Ivory Coast.
According to the United Nations Health Agency, the total number of cases attributed to Ebola in Guinea, Liberia, Nigeria, and Sierra Leone has exceeded 2,400, including 1,350 deaths. At present, no cases have been confirmed anywhere else in the world outside these four countries.
The Secretary-General of the UN has appointed Dr. David Nabarro, a British physician and public health expert, to coordinate the global response to the crisis. Dr. Nabarro was in the Liberian capital, Monrovia, on Friday and will also visit Freetown, Conakry and Abuja as part of his mission to revitalise the health sectors in the region.
Liberia, which has suffered the greatest toll in this epidemic with over 570 deaths, has seen a surge of violence in recent days. President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf has ordered a nighttime curfew and has placed some areas under quarantine. Soldiers opened fire and used tear gas to disperse protesting crowds as they evacuated a state official and her family.
There's good and bad news from the Democratic Republic of Congo, where at least 70 people have died from an outbreak of hemorrhagic gastroenteritis. According to the WHO, this is not Ebola. However, final tests have still to be completed.
Virush Yansari and Mark Caldwell. The Ebola outbreak is also hitting Africa's economy hard. Because of the closure of the border with Nigeria, thousands of Cameroonians and Nigerians are stranded together with their goods and possessions on both sides of the frontier. This has caused prices of some goods to soar because they are now in short supply. 80% of basic necessities in Cameroon are imported from Nigeria. This report now is by Moki Kenzeka.
It is quiet here at Idinau, an entry point for Nigerian goods into Cameroon. Nothing has been coming in across the Atlantic Ocean from Nigeria's Port Harcourt for close to a week since Cameroon announced travel restrictions in response to fears the Ebola virus could be imported from Nigeria. Here at Idinau, there are hundreds of frustrated Cameroonians who export farm produce to Nigeria. One of them is Leba Yvette, who told me she has not been able to export one of Nigeria's most cherished leaves, Nitum Africanum, popularly known here as Eru. It is widely used as a vegetable in soups and stews.
I buy Eru in Cameroon and take to Port Harcourt, that's in Nigeria, to sell. That is how I earn my living. I've been at the borders now for 4 days. I have been blocked. They say we cannot cross and go over to Nigeria due to Ebola. How am I going to leave? This Eru is perishable. It is the fourth day now. It's gone. The Eru is almost getting completely rotten. How am I going to leave?
In Idinau, I also met Rogers Bingwe, who imports books from Nigeria. He said he is devastated as his books are stuck in Port Harcourt. The timing is particularly bad as Cameroonians are preparing for the start of a new academic year in less than 2 weeks.
I'm making an appeal that let whoever has the authority to hit the hand on the table do it and release the educational risk countries back to school 2015 when in captivity. And that's not only the economy of the nation is blocked.
Mbome Kletus, a senior official at Cameroon's Ministry of Trade, says it is a challenging issue for thousands of Cameroonian small-sized companies and people who carry out operations with Nigeria on a daily basis.
The Southwest alone, we have close to 1,000 people who are moving in officially every week. Now, if you consider that this is maybe just about half of the people because of the porous nature of the border, it poses a big challenge.
In the hinterlands, the impact of the travel restrictions is not being felt yet. Businesses still have some reserves in their warehouses. But Tomo Lin, who runs a beauty shop in Boya, says the effects will be felt soon.
Everything we consume here comes from Nigeria. Now that they say they've closed the borders, how are we going to live? You cannot solve a health problem by creating an economic problem.
A report by Marky Kinzeka. This is Deutsche Welle's Africa Link, broadcasting from Bonn.
Africa Link, bringing you the story behind the story.
South African Parliament is to appoint a special committee to investigate possible action against members of the Economic Freedom Fighters, EFF, who disrupted proceedings in Parliament on Thursday. The leader of EFF, Julius Malema, and his fellow members yelled at President Jacob Zuma that he should pay back millions that were spent on security upgrades of his Inkandla home. This follows a widespread condemnation of Zuma and his failure to say whether he will pay back the money or not. Subri Govender has more.
This is the sound of South Africa's parliament collapsing into chaos.
Back the money!
The protesters asking for the money back were lawmakers from the Radical Economic Freedom Fighters, or EFF. Their chanting was directed at President Jacob Zuma as he was being grilled over controversial security upgrades for his private residence, which had cost the taxpayer more than 246 million rand or $24 million. The Speaker of Parliament ordered the chanting EFF members to leave the building, and when they refused, riot police were called. The worry among observers is that such incidents damage South Africa's democracy. A prominent political analyst based at the University of South Africa, UNISA, is Professor Soma Doda Fikeni. He says the economic freedom fighters have the right to raise issues in Parliament, but their present tactics will only diminish the reputation of Parliament in the eyes of ordinary citizens.
At the time when you have serious socio-economic challenges afflicting a greater part of our population and many stories of corruption linking politicians to that, can only erode the image, and the country need to have a difficult conversation in order to retrieve itself and get back from the detour it has taken.
The main opposition Democratic Alliance, DA, reflected the views of most people when it said that it wanted Zuma to take responsibility for Inkandla Gate, a reference to the lavish upgrade of his Inkandla residence. They too are concerned about long-term implications. Musi Maimani is the leader of the DA in Parliament.
We agree in the fact that the president must account on this matter, that we agree that without fail, that in fact we'll certainly even in committee be able to subpoena the president, because we believe in the constitutionality and the application of the rule of law. Because what we don't want is that in the long run, that the very law that we must undermine so that we don't have a law to hold on to.
The ruling ANC accused the EFF members of wanting to hijack South Africa's hard-earned democracy and bring about destruction and anarchy. Zizi Kodwa, spokesperson for the ANC, called on Parliament to take the strongest action possible to defend its integrity.
Their action and their conduct does not only undermine the values of Parliament, but also of democracy. It has brought the House and South Africa into disrepute.
However, a political analyst with the Institute for Security Studies, Judith February, believes there is another cause for concern, namely President Zuma's lack of accountability. While she did not support the rowdiness of the EFF members, she believes Zuma is at fault.
At the heart of all of this, of course, is that there is a gap in accountability, that the president does believe that he doesn't owe South Africa answers on Inkandla.
The leader of the EFF, Julius Malema, is unrepentant and unconcerned about the negative reactions to what had happened in Parliament, preferring instead to emphasize his opposition to the government.
We are not employed by the ANC and will never be told by the ANC how we must oppose them. We are fighting them. This is just the beginning.
That report was by Subri Govinda.
Human rights.
Human rights this week is in Zimbabwe. Zimbabwe, which is under veteran leader Robert Mugabe, has been featuring regularly low down in indexes of freedom. Ahead of the recent SADC meeting, which took place last week, Amnesty International, Human Rights Watch, and Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights accused Harare of dragging its feet in prosecuting perpetrators of human rights abuses such as political violence. Columbus Mavunga has more details.
The NGO Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights has been fighting for more than two decades to ensure that citizens in this country enjoy their rights. Their work involves legally representing activists and members of the opposition who have been arrested. They do this free of charge. Zimbabwe Chibwa, a senior official with the lawyers group, says it has not been easy, but they will continue.
Our role as human rights activists is to take the path every day. We have to make sure that they see that somebody is watching them. We have to act as the mirror where they can look and say, am I doing the right things?
Chingwizi, that Chibwa mentioned, is a transit camp for people who were displaced by floods more than 7 months ago. Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights fought a successful legal battle for the release of transit camp dwellers who had been arrested for demonstrating against what they said was ill treatment by President Robert Mugabe's government. Rights organizations say Chingwizi Transit Camp is a health time bomb due to lack of proper sanitation and safe drinking water. This is despite the fact that under Zimbabwean constitution, all citizens have a right to water and health. On Monday this week, Zimbabwe, despite its tainted history of human rights, assumed the rotating chairmanship of the regional Southern African Development Community. On the very same day, police pounced on opposition members who were demonstrating against the Mugabe government's failure to provide more than 2 million jobs promised last year in the run-up to July elections. Journalist Angela Jimu was arrested for taking photos of the police action. The police crackdown on the journalist and opposition members prompted strong criticism from various international human rights organizations. Noel Kutukwa is the deputy head of Amnesty International in Southern Africa. He made this statement.
The right to peaceful protest must be respected by the law enforcement agencies in Zimbabwe, Section 59 of the Constitution of Zimbabwe recognizes the right to protest and petition. Zimbabwe has just assumed the chair of the Southern Africa Development Community, which places an expectation that it will be exemplary in its conduct, including in upholding international human rights standards. Beating up would-be peaceful protesters does not set a good example for the region. Such conduct must be brought to an end.
In Southern Africa, Angola, Zimbabwe, Malawi and Swaziland rank far down in terms of respecting human rights and freedom. But Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights tries to take an optimistic look at the future, saying that eventually this will be a thing of the past.
A report by Columbus Mavunga. Now, we know that children under the age of 18 should not be forced to go to work in order to survive. But this is not the reality in the Upper East region of Ghana. There, children as young as 10 are toiling in the mines. Poverty is one of the reasons that make these children to risk their lives. Reports say more than 700 children are employed in and around mines in Ghana's Upper East region. Maxwell Souk went to visit the region, and here is his report.
It is a sunny afternoon in Gani, a town in the Upper East region of Ghana, and people are going about their duties amidst loud music. The majority of them depend on gold mining for their livelihood, but some few do a little trading. They have been digging for gold here since the 1990s, according to the town folks. On approaching Gani, which is about 45 minutes ride north of Bolgathanga, the capital of Upper East region, the sound of grinding machines is heard from every direction. The machines are used to grind stones collected for the mining pits by the local miners. Children as young as 10 years and below are also working in the mines. Athanga Akudugu is 9 years old. His employer is an elderly man.
I am doing this because of my stomach. There's nothing at home. I wish I could stop because I get afraid down the pit. At the moment, I won't get food if I choose to stop.
Several other children have been taken on by different mine owners. The children go to their mines because it is the only source of income for them, says Richard Amoa, a field officer for Africa's, a child rights advocacy organization in the Talensi district.
You see a child of age 11 working in the mines, and this child the one feeding the grandmother and other siblings back at home. The reason is that the grandmother, who is very old, cannot work. The other younger siblings cannot also do anything to fend for themselves. So you are taking this child of 11 years old out of mining, out of where his bread is buttered.
Child labor is against the law in Ghana. A mine owner can be fined 1,000 Ghana cedis for hiring a child. The parents can be fined the same amount. The laws are meant to prevent children from being exposed to the hazards of work in the mine. But the children in Ghana's Upper East region are being involved in every stage of the mining process due to poverty. The first stage of mining requires blasted rock to be fetched from deep down inside the mine shaft. Some of the tunnels can be 500 meters long.
So the child is lowered down. After the ore, the natural ore is blasted. It is blasted down there. Then this young child is lowered down in a bucket. The child sits in the bucket like this and is lowered down to collect this crushed ore, and they bag them in a sack, you see. So after all this is done, then the child is thrown up again.
Many deaths can occur deep underground, says mine engineer Gordon Baba.
It's not often that, but at times when we have a, maybe the holes have some problem, maybe the woodwork that we use to maintain it, when they are rotten, at times one person can just cause so many people to die.
At these mines, mercury, which is one of the world's most poisonous substances, is what is used by the miners to extract the gold by hand.
So after that, pounding this, we remove it by putting mercury, white mercury, like the way he's doing. Without the mercury, you cannot get the gold back.
In 2007, the NGO Africa's joined forces with the Talensi Nabdam District Assembly to get the children out of the mines by offering financial incentives to buy food and also pay for their educational needs. But so far, these efforts have failed to bring about any real change, and the children continue to be exposed to the dangers of life down the mines.
Maxwell Sook reporting there.
USA.
Let's hear now what you have to say about the stories we have been covering on this program. Abu Bakar Jalo is here with me. Hi, Abu.
Hi, Asumta. Our series of reports on the unprecedented outbreak of Ebola virus in West Africa have had a keen Africa Link listener in Bangladesh to write us, expressing gratitude for the information.
Let's take our listeners back to the top story for a quick reminder on the latest development in the fight to contain the spread of the virus.
The World Health Organization said on Friday that it has drawn up a draft strategy plan to combat Ebola in West Africa over the next 6 to 9 months, suggesting that the epidemic will not be contained this year. The WHO will host an international consultation meeting on potential Ebola therapies and vaccines at its headquarters in Geneva in early September.
Fadusi Alam from Kapti, Bangladesh wrote, "I think the effort to contain the spread of this virus is very good. I wish the healthcare workers treating Ebola patients success. You have been reporting about preventive measures against the virus. I also think that prevention is better than cure. More than 1,000 people, including a Spanish priest, have died from this epidemic. Your focus on this very important issue is helping us take good precautions. Many thanks, Africa Links, for these stories and for your report on the segment Behind the Headlines."
Thank you for that response, Fedusi. For your information, the segment Behind the Headlines is aired every Wednesday on this program.
And now from Yobe State, Nigeria, Muhammadu Jajere, who seemed to be taking German language classes, wrote to us in German.
Wow, how impressive.
Indeed. As far as I can recall, this is happening for the very first time on this program.
I assume your German is not that rusty, Abu. Can you read that text and also tell the listeners what it means in English?
Okay, sure, I can give it a try. Ich finde euer Programm sehr interessant und ganz toll. Meiner Meinung nach, es ist die Nummer 1 der ganzen Welt. Es ist mein Freund und Lehrer geworden, euer Herr Muhammadu Gendele Leru Janjare aus Yobestadt, Nigeria.
Awesome!
Translation. It says, "I find your program very good and interesting. I think it's the best in the world. It's become my friend and teacher. Yours, Mr. Muhammadu Gendele Leru Janjare from Yobestadt, Nigeria."
Thank you, Muhammadu.
And finally, from Ghana, a very keen listener and regular contributor to this program, Francis Robertson, wrote us with sad news. Francis has been quiet lately, but in a brief email he wrote he's lost a very close relative and has been very busy with the ceremony. He'll be with us again when he can. That's all from me. Now over to you, Asumta.
Thank you very much, Abu Bakar, and we are very sorry to hear that, Francis, and we look forward to having you on board this program. For all listeners out there, you can respond to topics covered on Africa Link or on our website by sending us a text message on +491609575910, an email to feedback.africa@dw.de or a letter to Africa Link, DW 53110, Bonn, Germany. You say we'll be back at the same time next week.
Harare, Nairobi, or Abuja. Africa Link correspondents reporting for you from wherever the story breaks.
And now a summary of what we have been covering. The World Health Organization says families hiding loved ones infected with the Ebola virus are one of the stumbling blocks in efforts to fight the epidemic. South African Parliament is to appoint a special committee to investigate the disturbance in Parliament on Thursday caused by the economic freedom fighters. We have also been hearing about Ghanaian children as young as 10 who are working in the mines. And that's it for this week. Mark Caldwell will be here on Monday. I'm Asumta Latus. I wish you a lovely weekend.